The Vedas are ancient scriptures of India. Thousands of years old and written in Sanskrit, they contain the spiritual heritage of all humanity. Pandit Rajmani Tigunayat explains how the wisdom and vision of the Vedas belongs to each of us and carries the true message of all spiritual traditions. He shows us how to use that wisdom and how to live a life of harmony and happiness. We join Pandit Tigunayat at the Himalayan Institute on the eve of a pilgrimage to the Mahakumbh Mela, a spiritual festival in India celebrated only once every 144 years.
Today I will give you the overview of this entire study that we are going to undertake during this grand occasion of Kumbh Mela. But before we undertake the study of this particular scripture, let me give you a general introduction of the Vedas, which are the soul of the spirit of India. And before I introduce you to the Vedic literature or the Vedas, or before I introduce the Vedas to you, let me give you a general history of India itself. To me, India is less of a political entity than a spiritual entity. Just as it is true with many other countries, many other nations, in past several thousand years, so many people invaded India from outside. So many times within India itself, the kings and monarchs fought among themselves. And as a result, India broke into several pieces, then again got reunited. Its political boundaries sometimes expanded, sometimes the political boundaries shrunk. And this has been happening for ages. But India as a cultural entity, India as a spiritual entity, remained unbroken. The spirit of India remained the same forever. And that is what so often the researchers and scholars on Indology forget, that India is not just a nation. The spirit of India is not confined somewhere in a building constructed in New Delhi, Bombay, Madras, Assam, or Calcutta. The spirit of India is as subtle as the spirit of any individual. And just as the spirit of the soul of an individual is beyond birth, decay, death, and destruction, similarly, the spirit of India is also beyond death, decay, and destruction. Unfortunately, so many people in India itself have forgotten this fact. They themselves have now become so undereducated about their own heritage, about their own great sublime tradition. The true India, India as a concept, began somewhere in Vedic period. The period where the knowledge of the Vedas were in practice. People were aware of the great scriptures, great masters. A particular group of people in Indian society came up with the idea of monopoly. And somehow, there was no system in India that could break the monopoly of a particular group of people, those who tried to and somewhat succeeded in monopolizing the Vedic wisdom by grabbing the entire ritualistic ceremonies into their own hands. And that particular class of people is called Brahmins. At some point in history, they were the custodians of great wisdom. They dedicated, or they were supposed to dedicate their life in the study of the Vedas, gain knowledge, and go and serve the community and work hard in raising the general consciousness of all mankind.
Thus was their status. And the scriptures themselves were so proud of, and all the people throughout the land were proud of having such people in their land. And therefore you find great, great sayings scattered throughout Sanskrit literature, throughout the Vedic literature, and those sayings such as Etat desha prasutasya sakashad agrijanmanah swam swam charitram sikshiran prithivyam sarvamanvah. How blessed is that land where there are the knowers of the Vedas and the practitioners of the Vedas. The knowers of the Vedas and practitioners of the Vedas were called Brahmins. Brahmana. Sanskrit word is Brahman, and in English it has become Brahmins. Brahmin. How blessed is that land where there are Brahmins, the knowers of the Vedas and practitioners of the Vedas. How fortunate are those people who live in the company of these great souls who have molded their external life in the light of their inner wisdom. May the people of the world learn something from these great people and build a healthy philosophy of life. This is what the literal meaning of that verse is. But somehow, at some point, these Brahmins perhaps became lazy, became victim of inertia, their studies went down, and their whole activities got confined to ritual practices. And even those rituals, somehow they failed to explain the inner meaning of those rituals. And since they themselves could not understand the inner meaning of the rituals, they started performing the rituals without proper understanding. And they started creating their own kind of rituals here or there. And suddenly, the entire Vedic wisdom, even in ritualistic sense, declined. Furthermore, somehow they managed to succeed. They managed to convince people that they themselves are the authorized people, authorized members of the society, to perform these rituals. And anyone else who ever wishes to be happy and healthy, or anyone who ever wishes to go to heaven or please God, must go through these rituals. The same tendency that you find in Christianity. In Christianity, you have church, you have priests, then you have hierarchy of the priests or clergies. In some cases, these clergies directly claim that they are the mediators between you and God, and sometimes they express this indirectly. Same tendency you find, you know, in the case of this Brahmin class of people in Indian society. It's not as much as you find today. You know, today it's much more relaxed, and people from every walks of life, they study, they learn, they do whatever they want. But I'm talking about that particular phase, that particular era in the Indian history, which you call the dark age of Indian history. And in order to somehow bring that kind of attitude to an end, the great teachers such as Mahavir Jaina and his other 23 masters, those who came before him, and great masters such as Gautam Buddha, they came forward and they reformed the society, or at least they tried to reform the society. But I will not say that they succeeded in reforming the society, but what happened, a part of society was already quite ritualistic, had become rigid in its belief system, and therefore some of the members of that society, they followed the footprints of Buddha and Mahavira, the founders of great religions of India, that is Buddhism and Jainism. And other members of the society prefer to stay the same, remain the same. And thus, in contrast to Buddhism and Jainism, there came another religion, which in our recent years has been known as Hinduism. I'll call it Sanatana Dharma, the great perennial Dharma. that predates Buddhism and Jainism. The word Hindu is very, very late terminology in Indian history. Perhaps a couple of hundred years ago, this word Hinduism came into existence. So this is the situation. Somehow, whether it's human tendency to lean on others, human tendency to be dependent on others, human tendency to seek salvation through others, or shortcut to salvation, enlightenment, which forced the people in India to become dependent on the priests, temples, pandits, or those who performed the external rituals. It's like a tendency that you notice everywhere in every religion, every culture, everywhere in the world. It looks like human mind is the same everywhere. Human tendencies are the same everywhere. But what you see in terms of rituals, dogmas, customs, superstitions, blind faith, dependency on priests, pandits, swamis, gurus, that is not what is taught in the Vedas. Vedas are compilation of the experiences of great masters, those who are free thinkers, those who taught only what they had experienced in their own personal life and what they had been practicing regularly in their own life. The Vedas are the compilations of the experiences of such great masters. And it is totally wrong to say that those masters were Hindus. It is as wrong to claim that Christ was Christian, Buddha was Buddhist, Mahavira was Jain. Buddhism came after Buddha had already left the planet. It is his followers who branded, who created Buddhism. Christianity came a lot after Christ. It is totally hard, it is impossible to even believe and imagine that Christ could have created one more faction in the society. In fact, very clearly he says in New Testament, I have come not to destroy, but to teach what previous prophets have taught. That's what exactly the Vedic tradition also says. That maha jano yena gatah sa pantha. What is the path? What is the road? Path is that which has been trodden by previous masters. Not a single place Rama or Krishna or Buddha say that what I am teaching is a new thing or new path. Never ever has been said. However, every single teacher ever born in India gives credits to the Vedas and Upanishads for his or her teachings. And when you read this vast literature called the Vedas, you find almost everything is being taught there. And hereby everything means straight away, directly it's taught. It's not that through interpretation that you say, well, you know, there is entire science of manufacturing aeroplanes found right in the Bible. Sometimes such startling statements are being made by religious teachers and preachers. Sometimes pandits also, Indian pandits also make this claim that all the sciences come from the Vedas. This is a very, very generalized kind of statement. And it is because of such generalized statements, the Western scholars really ridicule such Indian pundits. Sometimes such absurd statements are being made by very, very learned teachers, even those who are professors in the universities and colleges in India, that the real Vedas do not exist anymore in India. Germans stole it. That's why Germans succeeded in building airplanes. First thing, they do not know that Vedas, there were not just one or two copies of the Vedas sitting in India. There are many, many manuscripts. And even if it were stolen by Germans, still at least Germans edited it, printed it, published it, and many, many copies came back to India. And suppose even if it happens, still saying, making this statement that Germans succeeded in building aeroplanes, manufacturing aeroplanes, inventing the entire dynamics of aeroplanes, just because they got hold of the Vedas, that is very, very erroneous kind of statement. Wright brothers were Americans. They were not Germans. But that kind of, such kinds of statements are being made, which is sheer ignorance. I was baffled when I was studying in Sanskrit school. Often I used to visit Sanskrit University of Banaras with my teacher. They used to hold conferences, annual conferences. And the pandits are sitting there. And even my classroom, sometimes pandits make the statement. Anything they wanted to say, always they said, as it is written in our Vedas, and then that pandit goes on. Anything, on any subject, as it is written in the Vedas. As long as I was small, I did not have access to the Vedas, I believed it. I was so curious, is it really written in the Vedas? Wow, wish I can read the Vedas. So when Sanskrit pandits recited some slokas, some verses from in Sanskrit language and said, and their quotation was, it is from the Vedas, as the Vedas say, and then they repeated some Sanskrit verse. So I memorized those verses and I went and I looked into the copies of the Vedas, Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sam Veda, different kinds of Vedas. I could not find it. Then I looked at, I tried to find it. How can I find it? Vedas are very, very huge books, thousands of pages. How to find all those different references? So I managed to find a very, very authoritative book called Vedic Concordance by Bloomfield. That gives you every single details of anything that is written in the Vedas. So I looked through the Vedic Concordance by Bloomfield. I could not find. I started doubting these pandits. When I expressed my doubt, I was scolded. You arrogant boy. In India, you are not supposed to ask question. After watching what is the education system in the States, I find that Indian education system has become dead. Just textbook-oriented study. Even up to your graduation, you do not need to write an article, an essay. Whereas here, children, even in their elementary school, they write essays. In their high school, research paper. Where they don't have to think exactly the way their teacher thinks. Rather, the independent thinking is encouraged here. That is not the case in India. I got lots of scoldings. Because I asked, Guruji, where is this passage? It means you are doubting your guru. Whether your guru is right or wrong doesn't matter, but you must not say anything. Well, this is what has happened. So many people in India have not even seen a book of the Vedas. What I admire, at least one thing in the West, whether the people in the West read Bible or not, but at least they have a book of Bible sitting on their table somewhere under their lamp. At least there is a copy of the Bible available somewhere. Anywhere you go, in a hotel, in a motel, you find a book of Bible sitting there. How much time do they spend in reading the Bible? That's a different issue. But at least when the inspiration comes, desire comes, they have access to the Bible. They can look at the Bible. But in India, that's not the case. Long, long, long time ago, almost 100 years ago, just a few hundred copies of the Vedas were edited by Max Muller and were published. Several decades afterwards, then they were reprinted by Motilal Banarsidas in New Delhi. According to Indian standards, they were very, very expensive. Pandits, those who can read, normally they are not capable of buying that book. And those who cannot read have no interest in reading and no capacity to read. So they don't buy. So those books, they just sit with the bookseller. Another copy was printed almost 100 years ago by an organization called Arya Samaja. Commentary was written by Swami Dayananda Saraswati and his followers, and the books were printed, but according to an impartial scholar, is not very good translation because it is influenced, affected by a sectarian interpretation. So how can Indians, or even let's say Hindus, the custodians of Vedic legacy, ever claim to be real custodian of their Vedic legacy if they do not have a single book of Vedas in their house? They have not even seen. If 1% Hindus have seen the book of the Vedas, it will be a great transformation of Indian society. Just by reading first few verses and the last few verses of the Rig Veda, and just by understanding the implication of those mantras, even 1% Hindus, 1% Indians will have enough fire, enough energy, enough courage, enough vision to get up, stand up, and transform the society. But it has not happened. Now you may be wondering that I am praising the Vedas so much. What are the Vedas? What is written in those Vedas? I will summarize in two words. The essence of the Vedas are found in the first few beginning mantras of the Rig Veda and the last few mantras of the Rig Veda. And everything else, the vast range, the full spectrum of human life, and all that which is associated with human life is found somewhere in between these two passages. First mantra and the last mantra of the Rig Veda. And everything, all different branches of arts and sciences that ever developed in India, they are kind of expansion of elaboration of the wisdom that exists between the first mantra and the last mantra. There are 64 different kinds of arts. Horse riding, painting, poetry, cooking, dance, music, traveling, including stealing, theft, different kinds of arts. 64 standard, 64 different fields of art. They come from the Vedas. Then you go into more of the details, philosophy, psychology, spirituality, different methods and approaches to health and healing you find in the Vedas. But the essence of everything that is found between the first and the last mantra is found actually in the first and the last mantra. And let me give you the commentary on these two mantras, and that will give you the idea what is written in the Vedas and why Vedic knowledge is non-sectarian knowledge. Why Vedic knowledge is equally good for all Hindus, Christians, Muslims, Jews, and those who even don't believe in God, those who are even atheists. The wisdom of the Vedas is good for everyone. Those who believe in the Vedas, those who don't believe in the Vedas. Those who are so-called, quote, outsiders or insiders. For the Vedic sages, there is nothing like someone being outsider or someone being insider. So what is the first mantra of the Rig Veda? Om Agnimide Purohitam Yagyasya Devam Ritvijam Hotaram Ratnadhatamam. First mantra of the Rig Veda is describing the nature of fire, use of fire, the need for fire. It says, Agnim Ire, I meditate, I worship fire, I meditate on the fire, I worship the fire, I embrace fire, I love fire, I work for fire, I am alive for fire, I am alive through fire. Fire is the totality of existence. Life begins from fire. Life maintains its existence in fire and due to fire and through fire, and ultimately life merges into fire. Purpose of life is to know the fire and become fire. What is this fire? This fire refers to inner strength, light, enthusiasm, indomitable will. This mantra is simply telling, O human beings, wake up, get up, gather that fire that resides in you. Ignite that fire upon which everything else will come to life. O human beings, wake up. Live like an alive person. Don't live like a dead person. Living like dead is not the purpose of life. Be a truly live person. Wake up. Gather that strength that can put you on the path. Gather that light which can help you prevent tumbling here and there. Be light to yourself, be light to others. This is what this mantra says. Agnimi Re, I meditate on fire. Or the mantra is saying that, O human beings, wake up. Look at that spark, look at the spark that is right within you. That infinite potential is right within you. You are capable of being and becoming whatever you wish. Do not undermine your capacity. You are a child of divinity. You are a child of light. Light is your inherent nature. Light is your intrinsic nature. You are light. Light cannot be lost. The light is the force that enables one to find oneself. It is only when the light within you is dormant, you feel that you are lost. The light is Purohitam, Agni Mire Purohitam. Light is that which puts you forward, that which enables you to walk forward. It's the lack of fire, it's the lack of light that manifests in you in the form of confusion, in the form of lack of self-trust, lack of self-confidence, lack of courage, lack of enthusiasm, lack of self-motivation. And when you are lacking, when you do not have, or when you have very little of this light, the fire, and that is when you have no courage to walk forward, you sit inert. Sometimes, out of anxiety, you become afraid of future. You are afraid of future. You are afraid of the unknown territory. And therefore, you prefer to walk backward. You prefer to go back to that known old. Clinging to the old, holding on to old, not being able to come out of the past, is sign and symptom that the fire within you is dormant. The fire within you is not shining. Purohitam. But once you know that the fire is there within you, you will walk forward. And that's why Purohita, it says, you become your own guide. Light is the guide. Purohita means priest. Priest means that one who officiates the ceremony of life. One who officiates a ceremony, religious ceremony, is called Purohita. In English, it's priest. In a spiritual sense, it's the guide, it's the teacher who clarifies your doubts, who helps, who removes your doubt. Guru, one who removes the darkness of ignorance, one who removes the doubts from your life, one who gives you freedom from your fear and anxiety. That's called Guru, the teacher. In religious sense, it's called priest, Purohita. But here, the Vedas is saying, this particular mantra is saying, that Agni Mire Purohitam. I meditate on that fire who is, in true sense, is the actual Purohita, the priest, the teacher. This mantra is also giving you an indication that the teacher outside you is a valid teacher only if that teacher has any light, any fire within himself. The person in whom the spark is ignited, only that person can be a light to others. A dull, inert, confused person cannot be guide to anyone. In fact, when someone overcomes one's fear, confusion, doubts, it is a clear indication that the fire within that person is now brightened, ignited, awake. In tantric literature, same fire has been described as Kundalini Shakti, the fire of Kundalini. This particular Vedic mantra is telling that this fire is you. You are that fire. Tat Tvamasi, you are that Shvet Keto, O great seeker, you are that. Realize that you are that. Unless you realize and unless you identify yourself with that inner fire, you will remain in the grip of darkness. You become priest to yourself. You become teacher to yourself. The priest is within you. The teacher is within you because the fire is within you. All you need is to awaken that fire and become light to yourself and light to others. And without that fire, these external guiding forces will never ever be able to guide you all the way to your destination. Don't be dependent on external sources, external forces. Dependency is not your nature. Purna Swatantra, Swatantrata, perfect independence and freedom is your true nature. You are longing for that freedom. Why is there no one on the face of the earth who likes to be slave of someone? Because it's intrinsic nature of the soul, that fire, to be independent. Even children, when they want to grab something, they want to grab it by themselves. Have you watched how a child walks? How much pride the child has when he or she begins to walk independently without holding anybody's fingers. That is the intrinsic characteristic of that fire, which is you, which is your soul. The soul is you. Soul is the fire. Fire is the soul. And this fire simply means Shakti, the indomitable will. Swatantra Shakti, unrestricted power of will. The power that cannot be governed, cannot be controlled by anyone other than itself. The power which is self-regulated, conscious power, brimming with intelligence, knows its path, knows its course of action, knows its destination, knows its purpose behind its own self-existence. That's what you are. O human beings, know that you are fire. Know that you are center of warmth, center of heat, center of compassion. The fire of compassion is in you. That valiant energy, radiant energy that enables you to accomplish anything is right within you. Therefore, Agni Mide, I meditate on fire. Therefore, O human beings, the sages are saying that I meditate on the fire. The great sage, the sages are proclaiming that I meditate on fire. O human beings, you too meditate on fire. Just as by meditating on the fire, by meditating on one's inner light, by meditating on our inner light, just as we have attained the highest truth, you too can attain that highest truth because fire is not far away from you. It is you, it is with you. So better you wake up. Every aspect of your being is fully saturated with fire. Just as every aspect of creation is fully saturated with fire. In its final analysis, atom is but living fire. What is the nature of nucleus? It's concentrated condensed energy, the point of energy that resides in the center of atom. And that energy is actually shining fire. Starting from the grandest stars all the way to a speck of dust, all the way to the atomic and subatomic level, you find the existence of fire. Agnir yathaiko bhuvanam pravisto ekam 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 pratirupam bhuva rupam rupam pratirupam bhuva. It's the fire that has pervaded everything, that has penetrated everything that exists in the universe. And it's the fire, through its inherent capacity to create form and shape, has become many. It's the one fire has become many. And that fire is within you too. Therefore, wake up. And here this fire, again I'm reminding that this fire does not refer only to the fire that you see in the form of flame on which you cook your food and warm your hands. Here this fire means that radiant energy, boundless energy, the core of your being, that indomitable will, sankalpa shakti, the power of determination, which just sparks and suddenly you find yourself capable of doing anything that you wish. In such moments of this fire revelation, you feel that you are capable of accomplishing anything that you wish. In those moments, obstacles totally vanish. And if you capture that moment, then there is nothing in the world that can stand in your way. Obstacles totally evaporate. The thing is, what happens? We become lazy. We don't capture the moment. And that spark suddenly vanishes. You are left with that unawakened, dormant fire within you. Then again, your providence has to come and slap on your cheeks. Get up, you mankind, get up. Then again, due to your inertia, ignorance, you are just turning and tossing on the bed of your destiny. You become victim to your destiny because you are not respectful to the fire within you. You are not tactful, you are not skillful to take advantage of that fire, which is capable of helping you to become the creator of your destiny. Only a person who is not blessed with the awakened fire, only a person who is sitting there and not making any effort, is victim to his or her destiny. Law of karma is an universal law. However, it applies to those who are karmahina, inactive, inert people. Law of karma applies only to those whose fire is not awakened. Whose fire is not awakened. They become slave to their karma. They become slave to the karma of others. In fact, they become slave of the theory of karma, belief in karma, and faith in karma. Daivam devitka purusha vadanti. The God will do whatever God does, that's what will happen. It's okay, things. No. God is within you. God has given you freedom of choice. God has given you freedom to accept, freedom to reject. God is there in the form of intelligence within you. God is there in the form of that fire, ablaze fire. Therefore, daivam nihatya, get rid of this destiny business. Kuru paurusha matma saktya, perform your actions as a valiant, radiant person. Daivam nihatya, kuru paurusha matma saktya, yatne krite yadina siddhati kotra dosha. Even after making all the best efforts, if things don't work out, it's not your fault. But at least you get up, wake up. In the case of others, when you see somebody else suffering, and if you have the wisdom and insight to put a pacifier of destiny, law of destiny, theory of destiny in somebody's mouth, okay, go ahead, do it. It's all right. Things will work out. But in your own case, if you want to succeed in life, better you get up and do not wait your karma to come forward and help you. Do not wait. Do not be dependent on destiny. Because God has given you capacity and you are the creator of destiny. Some of the destiny you created out of ignorance, carelessly. But you can create desirable kind of situations and circumstances for yourself by applying the knowledge of the fire. Therefore, this fire is the true teacher, true guide, true priest. And this mantra also gives a clear indication that don't be dominated by anybody. A priest is just a priest. He has some knowledge of the fire, and that is why he is able to perform some fire rituals. But the true fire is within you. The external fire is created by sticks, and when the sticks are gone, the fire will get extinguished. When rain comes, fire will be gone. When flood comes, fire will be gone. But the fire within you is eternal. The fire outside you is short-lived. The fire outside you has limited application. The fire within you has unlimited application. The fire outside you has limited domain. The domain of the fire outside is limited. The domain of the fire inside you is unlimited. Come in touch with the fire within. If the external fire helps you gain some inner strength, insight, if the external fire helps you ignite the fire within, it's okay, go ahead. There is nothing wrong in it. But always remember, the path of ritual, the path in the external world is lengthy, time-consuming, less efficient. The rituals cannot lead you too far. And certainly, those who are experts in rituals, they cannot be your guide. They can be simply a facilitator. How long do you want to live with the help of facilitators? You need a facilitator only when you are helpless. You need respirator only when you are not able to breathe. When you need to be on respirator, only when there is no other option. Priests, pandits, swamis, gurus, teachers in the outside world, they are like respirators. They do not have more value than this. But do you want to be on respirator? Do you want to be on life support system? No. You want to be alive on your own. That's where you feel good about yourself. When you are on the life support system, you feel terrible. You wish to be out of that life support system as quickly as possible. Considering how great, how divine, how immortal is the light within you, the fire within you, the external supports are just like life support system, very, you know, humiliating kind of things. Yes, once a while you need that help. It's not wise to criticize that emergency kind of system. But that is just emergency system. Come to a teacher, come to a preacher, go to a temple, go to a church, go to a Bible, go to the books, listen to the tapes to get inspired. Read the map. But do not keep reading maps throughout your life. If you keep reading these maps throughout your life, when are you going to start your actual journey? Read the map and start your journey. And in order to start your journey, you have to have your own spark. Swamiji, the founder of the institute, tells his story, his experience. Long time ago, his master sent him to a teacher in Rishikesh. Teacher was very learned. He was teaching the Vedas and Upanishads, Bhagavad Gita. So Swamiji came studied with him for a month. He was very happy, very satisfied, and gratefully left the teacher. And he went on practicing. 12 or 16 years passed. Swamiji was passing through Rishikesh, and he remembered the teacher. And also he remembered many of the students, those who were studying with that teacher. So he just thought, you know, let me see how is everybody there and who is still there, who is not. When he came back, most of the students are still there, reading the same book again and again. And teacher is teaching, giving lecture on the same thing. Same students, still reading same Bhagavad Gita. Swamiji was shocked. You are not able to pass. You are not able to go beyond your elementary school. Now you have studied. Go in the world, go into the mountains, go in the monastery, wherever. Go and apply that knowledge. In a classroom setting, you learn theories. Then you go in the lab, make your experiments. Experience things directly. The direct experiential knowledge alone will be fully satisfying. It will bring fulfillment. That's the only valid knowledge. This gathering information is not enough. Therefore, find the teacher within and have an everlasting satsanga with the teacher within. Purohita. And you can know that only when you know that the fire within you is the true Purohita, is the true teacher, the true preacher. Because it is that teacher, that inner teacher, the inner fire that comes forward in time of need. If you are not able to help yourself with your own knowledge, if your own knowledge is not able to come forward in the time of need, it means that knowledge is still just an intellectual knowledge. That knowledge has not become a fuel to feed the fire within you. If the lectures, the teachings do not ignite the fire within you, then it means they are just kind of wet logs, very little value. But when the fire within you is ignited, the teacher within you is awake, then the moment there is a need, the teacher within you speaks to you. Your own knowledge comes forward and you do not need a counselor, a therapist, a teacher, or anybody to tell you that don't feel bad. It's all right. Come out of this thing. You will be okay. We are in need of being told by somebody else that you will be all right. You know, why don't you do this? Why don't you do that? As long as we are in need of somebody else to tell us, it means the fire within is still dormant. Otherwise, it will just come forward. And that's what teachers do. They take their chosen student through all kinds of chaotic situations where there is ample opportunity, there is great opportunity to see whether your own knowledge has been digested by you or not. Whether you are really living with that fire within you or you are just still dependent on the external sources and forces to guide you and help you and support you when you need any support and help. And once the fire within you has become your eternal friend, the fire within you is always there, then you become perfect student, you become accomplished student, and the accomplished student is the teacher also. Only a student who is mature, a matured student, can be put in the position of being a teacher. And who is the matured student? The one in whom the fire is fully shining. Fire is awake. Purohitam, ratnadhatamam, and that fire is the great gem. So that is one thing. The message of the Vedas is be strong, be healthy, be powerful, be energetic, and have confidence in yourself, have trust in yourself, have respect for yourself. Don't be dependent on others. Become fully independent. Be light to yourself, be light to others. And it's your own inner strength. It's your own insight. It's your own inner vision that will help you walk forward. That will help you stay on the path forever. that will help you keep walking till you reach your destination. Freedom is the message of the Vedas, and that comes when you are strong in your thought, speech, and action. Let the fire illuminate your thought, speech, and action. Let there be energy. Let there be power. Let the power radiate through your thought, speech, and action. And it is possible only when you have seen the fire within you and you have become one with that fire within you. Self-realization. The fire realization simply means self-realization. To know yourself, to know that you are the eternal light that cannot be extinguished by any worldly situations, any worldly circumstances. None of the worldly circumstances, none of the worldly situations, none of the worldly storms can extinguish this fire. That's what you are. Once you gain that strength, once you gain that vision, once the fire begins to manifest in your thought, speech, and action, then what is your role in the society? What is your role in the community? How do you conduct yourself? How do you conduct your life? How do you live in the world afterwards? First thing is, gain that strength, gain that power, be powerful, be strong, be clear, overcome your confusion. And once you have gained that level of realization, once the fire within you is fully awake, then what? How do you live in this world? How do you interact with others? That is what is being described in the last few mantras of the Vedas. Sangachadvam, sambadadvam, sambo manansi jayatam. Beautiful mantra. Sangachadvam, walk together. Sangachadvam, walk together, or let others walk with you. Sambadadvam, talk together, communicate with others, and let others talk to you. Samvo manansi jayatam. Think together and let others participate in your thinking. It means create a sense of harmony between your action and the actions of others. Create a sense of harmony between your speech and the speech of others. Create a sense of environment of harmony between your thoughts and the thoughts of others. Let you not isolate yourself from the rest of the world. Let the world benefit from you. When you walk, walk with others. Don't become arrogant that you are now great holy man with fully awake fire within. You do not need anybody's help. Why should you care for anyone else? You are superior to everybody else because the fire within you is so great. You have gained so much knowledge, so much strength. Physically, you are so macho, so great, so strong. Mentally and verbally, you are so effective. Therefore, you are a totally breed apart person. No. Sangachadvam. Better you walk with others. Let others walk with you. Don't leave anyone behind. When you are walking on the path of light, take others with you. That is the job of a leader. That is duty of a leader. Once you, that fire is within you, once your path is illuminated, once your interior and external life is fully illuminated, then let that illumination, let that enlightenment become productive and fruitful, not only to you, but rather to the rest of the world. Those who are not capable of walking at your pace, help them grow their strength so that they may gather the speed so that they can walk with you. If you are capable of helping them, giving them ride, you give them ride. Means help others, serve others, care for others. This Sangachadvam, walking together, simply means let your inner strength and wisdom, mature into love, compassion, kindness, and self-sacrifice. Do not become stingy in terms of your spiritual achievement or your inner development. Let others bask in that light, which is you. Let you not become unproductive and uncreative. Sangachadvam, sambadadvam. Learn to communicate with others. When you gain that knowledge, and due to that knowledge, due to that fire, due to that light, your understanding of yourself and the understanding of this universe expands. Make sure that your expanded knowledge does not become a barrier between you and others. So often the scholars and learned people, they talk at such a high level that ordinary people cannot follow, cannot understand. What good is that knowledge? What good is that information? What good is that illumination which cannot be understood by anybody? It means you have some problem of communication. If somebody is not able to understand you, if somebody is not able to understand your message, it means you are not able to understand them. You are not able to understand their level of thinking. You are not able to understand their language. Whenever you try to communicate any wisdom, anything, any idea which you think is so profound and so deep, better you also commit yourself to next level of learning, and that means learn their language, learn their way of life, try to find out what their problems are, what their concerns are, where they are stuck, so that you can put yourself in their shoes. Only then they will feel comfortable to become part of you. Sometimes Swamiji used to make certain remarks regarding some of his own students, that he's useless. He's a uselessly knowledgeable person because he's not able to communicate. Suppose if I start telling all these things in a very mystical kind of language, the light is so brilliant and vibrant, and once it dawns from above, your whole life is illuminated. What good is that kind of, you know, presentation and lecture which you cannot understand? Simple thing is, why I'm talking in this language today? I'm emphasizing only the inner strength, self-confidence, self-trust, and freedom and independence, because that's where we are stuck. If I have to talk to some mystical person, some mystic, then I will talk about the mystical nature of fire and its yogic meaning, the kundalini shakti and the different chakras, and then doing the havan, the fire offering at different chakras, then I will talk in that language. Yes, there is another level of the meaning of fire that needs to be explained. But important thing is that message must be understood. Both of us, the teacher and student, the enlightened and unenlightened, the person who is driving the car and person who is asking for a ride, they both should be able to understand each other. They both should communicate with each other. Therefore, sambadadvam, the mantra says, means don't isolate yourself from your society, from your family, from your nation, from your culture. Wherever you are, be a healthy citizen of that place. Let others be happy with you, and let you be happy with others. Live a kind of life where you are not threat to anybody and nobody else becomes threat to you. Through your presence, do not create any disturbance in the society, and live a kind of life that society doesn't disturb you. And that is possible when you learn to communicate with others properly. This law applies in every aspect of our life. Between wife and husband, between parents and children, between two friends, between teacher and student, between two members of the society, between the members of different cultures and members of different religions and communities. Problems are there just because people do not communicate with each other. People don't talk to each other properly. People don't communicate, you know, people are not talking to each other. People are not understanding each other. then samvo manansi jayatam. At the level of thinking, try to be with each other. Once you have gained the clarity of mind, once you have gained the inner strength, then always be considerate. Try to see, try to understand the feelings of those whose fire is less awake than yours, whose fire is much more dormant than yours. Try to understand the feelings of those who are still walking in the darkness and see how they feel. And therefore, the way they are behaving, what's the force behind that kind of behavior? Somebody loses temper. Try to understand why that person loses the temper. Why is that person behaving the way that person is behaving? And handle the situation while considering all the pros and cons, all the components that centers around that person's personal life. Then you will become a nucleus of the family, society, community. And automatically, that capacity of being a leader will emerge. You become a leader when you learn the dynamics of sangachadvam, sambadadvam, samvomanansi jayatam. When you learn the art of walking together, talking together, and thinking together, only then you will come out, you will emerge as a leader. Otherwise, you may have lots of knowledge, you may be a wonderful person, fully satisfied within, fully content within, but you are useful only to yourself and you are totally useless to the rest of the world. A fully enlightened person is he or she who is light to oneself as well as knows the art of using that light to illuminate the path of others. And that's what the message of the Vedas is. Atma Deepo Bhava. One step, be light to yourself. And then Paradeepo Bhava, be light to others too. And in order to accomplish that, you have to be strong, you have to be clear, you have to have trust in yourself. And you will notice that from every corner of the universe, help is just pouring. And also you will notice that effortlessly you are walking and people are walking with you without any hesitation, without any complex, without any conflict. That is the message of the Vedas. Now, between these two ends of the spectrum, there are numberless other forms of teachings, numberless other forms of guidelines. And that's what the Vedas are trying to communicate to the world. And that's what will continue in our next sessions. Thank you. Good night.